All right, welcome to episode 34 of the Bobbycast with songwriter, artist, friend of a lot of friends who've been on this show already. Like we have an odd circle that we've never actually met before. I feel like I know you because I'm such a huge fan.
Same here.
Natalie Hemby is here, but most of our friends have been in that chair, so it's nice to finally have you here.
I know. I feel like it's all warmed up for me, so which is good.
I should just get this out of the way. I've seen you out before, but been a little intimidated to come up and say hello.
Oh my goodness!
Because you have one of those presences about you.
Do I really?
You
do.
Well, it's just if you.
I'm sure people would say the same about you, though. Like you.
Well, I don't go out. So no,
I don't either. This was an anomaly if you saw me out.
It was like a songwriter or you know one of the industry events, and I was like, yes. I don't want to go. I just feel like I bother people, so I'm a big fan. Like,
no, dude, I'm a big fan of yours. You come bother me anytime.
I will bother you after this a lot. So Natalie's here. We have a lot to talk about because when we lined up and started doing these 34 episodes ago, we picked like 10 people that we wanted to talk to, and it was. You were on the list, and I was like Caitlin Smith and yes. Maren, and you have people that I'm close to that I know have really great stories. And
oh, yeah.
Throughout all of this, you can see all of those. But it's an odd time because since then, you also have a record out, too, so we have so much to talk about.
Oh, we have so much to talk about. So, yes, I have some great stories, too. So
let's start from the very beginning.
Yes.
Let's start from – I want to run through – just so everybody gets hooked real quick. I want to play quickly – it's all six of your number ones in a very quick montage, and then I want to break down your whole life and make you cry.
Okay,
this
good.
This is what we do. It's like an Oprah thing.
I need this, really.
All right, Natalie Hemby's here. Number ones include Miranda, White Liar. Hey, white liar. Truth comes out a little- your finger still pops. You still like that one, huh?
I love it.
You still?
I do.
That's cool. Because some artists will be like, oh, I'm so tired of it. You know what?
Yes.
But I saw your finger pop immediately. That's so cool when someone still loves it after that long.
Well, I haven't heard it in a while. I was like, that sounds pretty damn good.
How about this one? Downtown, Lady A. And I don't know why you don't take me downtown. Like you got anywhere better to- also, Little Big Town, Pontoon. On the pontoon. Making waves and catching rays up on the roof. Tornado, Little Big Town. Yeah. Miranda, Automatic. Hey, whatever happened to. By the way, you won the ACM, nominated for CMA, and nominated for a Grammy for Song of the Year on this one, right? Is that right?
Yes.
Was all that right?
Yes.
Okay. Lots of facts. I'm trying to
start. CMA, ACM, and then nominated for Grammy. It won for ACM.
Yeah. And then Justin Moore, You Look Like I Need a Drink. You look like I need a drink right now. You look like you're gonna drink. And that's just the surface. Just want everybody to know what kind of powerhouse. That's why I'm intimidated, quite frankly.
Oh, my goodness. Not at all. Like,
I feel like you, and I can be completely wrong on this, but because you know how you see people through your eyes. Like, I look at other people through my experiences and judge them based on that.
Right.
And since I am at times a very vulnerable creator, I look at someone like you and go, man, what's her to do all of that and to see your catalog?
Like, it's kind of crazy. You know what? I don't really know. You know what? I have been writing. I literally got my first publishing deal when I was 19. And I signed with Barbara Orbison, Still Working Music Group, which there's a funny story there. Literally, I thought for years that Roy Orbison was blind. And I was like...
Because he had the glasses?
Yes! So Barbara, I was like... Barbara, tell me what it was, you know, what's it like living with someone who's blind? Like, what kind of challenges did Roy have? And she was like, Natalie was not blind because she's German or whatever. But I've just been writing songs for so long. I never thought, honestly, I would be doing country music because, first of all, my whole family's in the music business. My dad is an amazing guitar player. And I'm not saying that because they're my family. He's actually won a Grammy, and he's literally played on all these Christian records and also a lot of pop records back in the 90s when this was like the heyday for it.
Like, what pop records did your dad play on in the 90s?
He played on Brian McKnight's record.
Wow.
He's played on Michael McDonald. He just played on One step at a time. Leonard Cohen's last
record. One step at a time. So Brian McKnight. What did
yes.
he?
Yes. So I don't know which record he put. Sorry.
I'm such a Brian McKnight
fan.
Well,
I am too, and I should know this, and I don't. But he was one of those musicians. He just played on just a ton of records, you know. And he also wrote songs for Amy Grant. Like, Amy Grant is like our family. My mom's worked with her for over 30 years as her personal assistant. And my dad, he wrote on a few, he played on her records, and he wrote some songs on like Baby Baby. And
your dad wrote?
Yeah, a couple.
Baby Baby?
No, he didn't write Baby on the record, Baby Baby. Yeah. Actually, I think it's called Heart of Motion. See, I'm getting all these wrong. But yeah, he was in the music business, and my uncle Ron, who is an amazing singer, he was in this band called the Buffalo Club, and they had like a top 10 hit in country music in like 96.
So, and you didn't think you, even though you're from Nashville.
Yeah.
Which is odd.
No, I know. I wasn't born here, but I was raised here. My parents moved here when I was two. But no, I wanted to do rock music. I wanted to do like Sheryl Crow, like kind of like Alanis Morissette. All that kind of stuff was on the radio. Lil Fair was huge whenever I was trying to get a record deal. And I kind of wanted to, I loved the more roots rock, like Tom Petty kind of stuff. And I tried to get a record deal for years on that. But, you know, radio changed so quickly in those years. It was like, it went from like, first of all, Melisma singing from like Mariah Carey to Whitney Houston to like, then it went to like Nirvana and all the grunge rock. And then it was the dawning of the Britney Spears era. And throughout all this whole process, I was just trying to find my own sound, my own way. And, I almost got a huge record deal with Columbia Records. I think it was like 1999, which I'm, or 98, 99, somewhere around there. I'm pretty sure if I looked through this contract, I probably still would be signed there. They probably owned everything that I have, literally. But anyways,
what happened with that?
11th hour. No, we're not signing anyone. It didn't work out. And you know who was going to do my record? Jay Joyce.
Really? And so that was, you know, Jay Joyce playing Wallflower. I mean, that Jay Joyce was doing a lot of.
Oh, he did Patty Griffin, Flamin' Red, which I was a huge fan of. And he, Macy Gray's record, and I Am Shelby Lenny had a song in there.
And now he's here, and he's like the biggest producer in country.
He totally is. It's
which
really
is crazy.
It is.
And you talk about Sheryl Crow, one of my all time favorites. Like that
Me
Tuesday
too.
Night Music Club album changed my life.
Me too. Me too. I remember listening to it on West End at Tower Records. And I think it was like 94, and I was like, holy shit, I love this. Sorry, can I cuss on here?
Okay. Absolutely.
And I was like, I love this record. And the reason why was because I so related to her voice, because I have what I call party girl voice. I'm always a little hoarse. And I just had a deeper, raspier voice. And I don't know, I just loved her singing, you know. And I loved the record, and I was looking at who wrote the songs and who played on it. And Bill Bottrell was amazing, and all those guys were. Dave Berwald, who played on it. But so she was like, she's my favorite too. She's literally my idol. And
I'm assuming you've got to know her.
Yes.
Isn't and as awesome. Much as I loved her music, like just as a person,
right?
And I don't like to meet people that I really love because you can't. You'll be let down.
I'm the same way.
Like, I don't want to meet my heroes.
No, they say don't meet your heroes, but I'm telling you, I'm glad I met mine. I love her to pieces.
And even on a personal level with her, with Sheryl, and stuff that I haven't talked about on the air, but one of my best friends and someone on the show has been adopting, and Sheryl was huge, like instrumental off the air, no radio, anything, has just been such a great, like,
she's so generous
with her time, with
she
calling
is.
Other influential people.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's funny because I'm like, I feel like she doesn't know she's Sheryl Crow, which kind of makes me laugh. But I'm so glad I met her later on in life. You know, I think if I would have been young and I met her, I would have just been fangirling her.
I have a picture of us hugging and it, I keep it hidden, but it's like the first time I got to hug Sheryl Crow.
Oh, right.
Like I love Sheryl. Anyway.
I do too. Well, and if she texts me, I literally am sort of like, Sheryl's texting me right now.
That's funny.
It's still cool.
So when you started and you were going to put out a record as, you know, 21, 19,
yes.
How old you were with Columbia.
I was very attractive and very skinny, and I was absolutely gorgeous, and I was going to put out this amazing record. I'm just kidding. Sorry.
As all 19 to 23
right.
year olds
no,
think.
No, seriously.
What did you think you sounded like then? Was it the Jagged Little Pill, Alanis?
Was yes. It was probably, actually, it was a cross between Alanis and Cheryl, I would think. It was very, pardon the term, but it was very balls to the walls. Like, I loved that kind of music, just rock music. You know, with like kind of Rolling Stones, you know, that sort of thing. It was interesting. I wrote actually with Tommy Lee James on a lot of these songs, which here's a roundabout circle. Then I got a roommate. Her name was Cindy Thompson. And I introduced her to her and Tommy. And they've made this record together. They won all these awards. And Cindy was a great country music artist. But I wanted to do rock, like full on. And I loved bands like Semisonic. All those.
And for those that don't know Semisonic, for example, Closing Time.
Exactly.
The song that's played at the bar every night whenever it's time to go.
And then now Dan Wilson is Mr. Songwriter Extraordinaire, wrote Someone Like You by Adele, you know. So that's been pretty full circle as well. But
It's crazy. And it's crazy how much that sound now is this sound now.
Oh,
that
I
sound
know.
Then is this sound now.
Yeah, it is.
Like if you took Tuesday Night Music Club and you just took it and said, hey, here's this new record.
Yes.
Check it out.
Totally.
I would be like, okay, I got to play all this on the air today, and it sounds fresh and new on country radio.
Well, and you know who else I loved back then was Beck. I still love Beck. I think he makes amazing
and
records.
And he changes.
Yeah, he does.
Constantly.
Constantly.
Like every time Beck, because I'm a huge Beck fan too, every time Beck changes, and again, I wasn't alive when Bob Dylan went electric.
No,
right?
I wasn't either.
But I always think when he went from Beck to Beck to Beck, it's like every time it's like that Bob Dylan thing where his fans
it
are like,
is.
What the F is happening? Like, oh, this is awesome.
Yeah, and it might take you a year to catch on to what he was doing, but he's brilliant. And I always loved his writing styles too. Just like the quirky, one of my favorite is, and some good old boy on Odelay. Oh, what's that
I play that Odelay album backward and forward from like, you know, two turntables and a microphone. Like,
right.
I mean,
it's classic.
Yeah, Beck's awesome.
You know, Devil's Haircut, all that good stuff.
I got a Devil's Haircut. I used to play that on alternative radio. I would play that song all the time. I haven't thought about that song in forever. Wow. So that was you then.
Yes. Yeah, it was.
We were basically the same person then, too, I think.
I think we were. Yes. I'm telling you, dude, we might be cousins or something.
And we're both
know.
From the South, so we very well could be.
Where are you from?
I'm from Arkansas.
Okay.
So we could have lots of relatives.
We do, probably. We might have family in Walnut Ridge, Arkansas, so...
And when you're in Arkansas, you know every town in Arkansas because it's
Arkansas.
It's just Arkansas. So you try and you don't sign. And so you start writing songs. Did you just want to be a writer then? Or was it like, okay, that didn't work. I'm not going to pursue the artist part of it.
You know what? I was devastated. I was very disappointed. And, you know, I didn't know I'm like a Timex. I take a licking and keep on ticking. But, I got knocked down from it, but I had a publishing deal, and then I met my husband, and we became really good friends, and then literally got engaged, and we got married, and we were like, let's move out to LA, because I grew up here in Nashville, and I loved Nashville, but I also hated it. I was like George Bailey in Bedford Falls. Like, this was my Bedford Falls. I wanted to leave here. I was like, I'm going to go places. I'm doing this with my life. Damn it, I'm going to have this huge record deal and I'm going to be singing on all kinds of stuff. And I always hit a wall. It never worked out for me. And so my husband and I, we got married and literally about a month later, who he is a producer as well, but a month later we moved out to LA, lived out there for a few months. And man, just
a few
like
months.
A month. Yeah, we didn't stay very long. We came hightailing it back home because LA is so hard to live in, and especially if you don't have a lot of money.
It's expensive.
It's very expensive.
The people are very affected.
Yes.
Out there too. That's why it's hard for me. Growing up in the South.
Yeah.
And where people are people.
Yeah.
It's like you're walking into a plastic.
Well, you just feel like after all the people that I really loved from out there were either from LA or they were from the Midwest. But it was so funny because it was like I found myself either try. It's like you either become LA or you get eaten up by LA, you know? And when I go somewhere, I find myself going, who's this and what do they do and how can they help me? And I hate that more than anything.
Do you feel like that? Because I do a little bit now too, but don't you feel like that now a bit too because you're at the level you are? Or don't you kind of wonder why people...
Cause sometimes.
Nobody wants to be my friend. Like, really, if I didn't have a job, cool job, nobody would want to be my friend.
I don't think anybody would want to be my friend either. Maybe they think I was funny or something, but I don't know. No, I don't... No, there is a little bit of that, I think. You know, it just kind of comes with territory, but it's also a great way to set an example, I guess. You know what I mean? So, but I definitely, when you're out in LA, when I was out there at the time, I definitely felt like I just didn't like the person I was. And so we came home.
After a few months. So I'm assuming you rented.
Yes, we did. And we stayed in a nice area, but it was like, we didn't have any money. It was just not fun. So, but on my last day there, I met with a publisher out there and with Sony Publishing, and I had a great meeting. And so I came home and I told her I was moving back. So her name was Kathleen Carey, and she's awesome. I came home, got a job at Comcast because we needed health insurance, worked there for like 2 to 3 years. In the meantime, my husband gets this job to produce, co-produce with Frank Liddell, this girl, Miranda Lambert, who was third runner-up on National Star.
New artist from TV, basically.
Yeah, new artist from TV.
Not even the winner, by the way.
And also, I might add, that was another thing that was changing the formats as well, was TV, you know, from American Idol to, I mean, everything you can imagine, all the TV shows. So anyways, you almost had to be on a TV show during that time to get a record deal. I mean, that's almost like what they were looking for. So he started working with Miranda, and then they started all having, and I mean, literally Mike used to come home and play all these records. I mean, he played, produced, engineered, mixed all like the first three records. And I just heard her music through the house all the time. And I would sing harmony. I sing harmony on all her records and stuff. But in the meantime, I'm still working at Comcast. And and then I also got a publishing deal with Sony in LA. It's like my last bid to try to be an artist. So I went out, I didn't go out to LA, but I was just writing for this project. And they, once again, I was meeting with labels. I mean, literally at 26, someone told me, they were like, well, she's kind of old to have a deal right now. Which is hilarious to me. I mean, which it just makes for a great story now. But at the time I was pissed. I was like, I'm not old. But anyways, none of that worked out. But Mike was doing so well. And he was doing all this stuff with her. And then David Nell, Eli Young Band. But he finally was like, hey, you should write with my wife. I mean, and she had met me because I'd sang on her records and stuff. And I'd sang with her on a couple of things too. And she was like, Natalie, I want to write with you on this next record. And I was like, will you call me?
I don't want to bother you. You call
me. I'm like, I'm available. You just tell me when you have time. So she ended up calling me and finally, and literally we wrote 8 songs in 2 days. And it's because, I mean, I literally had all these ideas I'd just been saving for, and it was White Liar, so Only Prettier.
Let's talk about that. Let me stop you for a second. Just for those at home, you wrote 8 songs in 2 days. Now, most writing sessions, people put, 4 to 5 hours aside and go, we're going to write.
Yeah.
And then you come up with a song, and you hopefully you demo it, and it's a thing.
Yeah, it is.
And sometimes I have friends who do double writes.
Yes.
And they'll write, and that's a lot. Like, you do a double write with 2 songs, you're exhausted.
You are.
You did 8 songs in 2 days.
Yes. You know what? Miranda, at the time, she lived in Texas, and I only had her for a couple of days, and I was like, I'm going to drink coffee, and I'm going to write my brains out. I don't care. I'm like, I just wanted to get... But the thing about I liked about it was I really loved the songs. I had been working on the title White Liar for a while, and I was trying to make it this dark, mysterious thing, and it was just, yeah. She literally came up with that chorus like that, like just so easy.
Talk about this. So you have the title, but you don't have it yet. You have the title. So how do you say, hey, I want to do a song called White Liar? Like, what do you say?
Well, I was like, I have this idea, and I was like, I said, I've just been trying to come up with something, and I haven't come up with anything yet for it. Like, for Only Prettier, I had it very mapped out. I had basically mostly the verse and the chorus mostly written. But with White Liar, I was like, I didn't know where to go with it. And she goes, well, I don't know. Like, what about like, hey, White Liar, truth comes out a little at a time.
Like,
and I was
like that.
Like that, literally. And I was like, oh my gosh, yes. And I was like, we wrote it in 30 minutes.
Would that be the moment that you went, okay, she's really special?
Yeah, I would say that would be, but I tell you what, on her first record, she wrote Love Is Looking For You Now by herself. And she also wrote Kerosene by herself too. But Love Is Looking For You Now is like, what an amazing song that was. If anybody could ever go back and listen to that, they need to. It was so, and she wrote it when she was 16. And I was just like, damn, this girl is really good. Like she's, I don't know. I really have always known that Miranda was a great writer.
Would that be the first big check that you got was White Liar?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yes.
The first mailbox money where you're like, holy crap, like I can actually not work at Comcast?
Absolutely. And honestly, it's probably the song that's made me the most money because usually your first hits are the ones that keep generating because that's what they always go back and play over and over and over again for years. So if you can have a first hit with an artist, that's a really great thing. And the great thing is it's her first hit as well, her first number one. You know, Kerosene, I totally thought Kerosene or Gunpowder and Lead, all those should have been number one, but they just weren't at the time for whatever reason. But that was her first number one and my first number one. And it was really special to get to share that with her, you know.
That's awesome. So let's talk about 100 Flowers for a second. If you're hearing this and it's not Valentine's Day yet, don't put off the fact that she wants flowers. Beautiful flowers, by the way. 1-800-Flowers.com. Go ahead and get in on this right now because for right now, beautiful rose bouquets, $29.99, and that's where they start. These breathtaking roses from 1-800-Flowers are picked at their peak. They're shipped overnight to ensure freshness, and she's going to love them. So just pick up your delivery date right there. 1-800-Flowers will do the rest. 1-800-Flowers has an offer for if you're listening right now to this Bobbycast. So a dozen red roses for $29.99 plus chocolates, perfect for Valentine's Day while supplies last. Now, if you're hearing this, it's after Valentine's Day. Let me also recommend 1-800-Flowers.com too because it's fresh. Like it's like they chop the flowers, they cut them, they box them, they send them to you, and it's perfect. To order a dozen red roses right now for $29.99 plus a box of chocolates for free, 1-800-Flowers.com/bones, 1-800-Flowers.com/bones. And don't wait because what's going to happen is it's going to be too late, and then you're not going to have it, and then it's going to be like, dang, 1-800-Flowers.com. All right, so we're back, and I want to talk about, you said you sang harmonies on Miranda's early stuff.
Yes.
You also, did you sing with Amy Grant? Because you mentioned her earlier. Did you sing with her?
You know what? I never sang on her records, but I sang at she used to do this thing back in the 90s called The Loft. And she had this group of kids who come together and they would do like praise and worship songs, but they'd also do like these fun songs that were kind of silly, but they had like plays and they had all these like musical guests that would come on. And so they did a record and I sang on that record. I mean, with a big choir, but I've sang with Amy several times. Amy has been so awesome to me. The first song I ever wrote, this is a funny story. The first song I ever wrote was called actually, I wouldn't say ever wrote. The first good song I ever wrote. Decent. I don't even know if it's good anymore, but it was called The Naive One. And she heard it. My mom played it for her, and she was like, hey, you want to come play a bluebird around with me? And I'm 19. I'm like, oh, yeah, sure. I'd love to, you know? Like, Amy should be so honored to have me. But anyway, so we go to this bluebird around, and it's Randy Scruggs, John Hiatt, and this brand new artist, Patty Griffin.
Wow.
And I'm 19 at the time, and I've never heard Patty sing, and they let me go first. So I sing my song, and then everybody claps, and then they go around, Amy, Randy, John Hyatt, who I was a huge fan, and then Patty is sitting right next to me, and she sings Poor Man's House. And I just absolutely flipped out. I just was like, oh, my God. I felt kind of stupid. I didn't know. But she had just put out Living with Ghosts, that record. And But that was my first Bluebird experience.
So when you say that, a couple of things come to mind. And because I've been able to be lucky enough to play there too, it's like you don't want to follow somebody that's really good.
Oh, no.
It doesn't matter how good you are. If you go behind somebody that's super good, I felt dumb because I'm not good. I'm just kind of funny.
Well, I mean...
And you're following Patty's amazing.
Patty was...
Did you go, oh, crap? Or were you just such a fan that it didn't bother you?
Well, you know what? They let me go first, so I didn't know how great everybody was.
But it came back around to you, right?
Like, no, they let me do one song.
Oh, okay. Because
yeah, I was a special guest.
Okay. That's awesome then.
Yes.
Then you just got to enjoy it.
I got to enjoy it,
because
yes.
You didn't have to go again after Pat. Oh, because I'd have been like...
Well, but in a similar story, Amy, years later, hey, do you want to play a Bluebird round? You got to be careful when she asks you, because you don't know who's going to show up. And I'm like, sure. So it's her and Vince, Allison and Dan, and Mindy Smith. And so I had to go after Allison.
So this time you had to do all the songs. Yeah. You had to go after. That's funny.
I was pissed, but.
But it makes you better. When you said it made you better.
Like, it did. And you know what? I'm in my head, I'm like, which one of us does not belong here or whatever. But you know what? I enjoyed it and it was fun. I just did me, you know, just be you. But I will say, I had another point, doggone it, I was going to make. I can't remember. But anyways, Amy's given me a lot of first moments, and I'm so grateful to her for that.
So Amy, Miranda, I mean, it sounds like the common theme here are strong women. Like,
oh, yeah,
that's,
totally.
That's really, and that's why I wanted to go back to that for a second, because it just seems like that your theme and your life and your music is strong women.
Yeah, it is. I'm a nice person, but I always someone asked me recently, if you could compare yourself to a fictional character, who would it be? And even though in theory she's not a fictional character, but I'm literally the unsinkable Molly Brown. Like, I might get beaten down, but I get right back up. So, but I just, you know what? I also feel like I love music so much, and I don't care. It got to a point with me where I was like, I don't care if I'm singing at a coffee shop and no one's listening. I don't care if I'm singing at church. I just want to do music, you know? And I'm just lucky that I get to do it now this way. But I've had all these, you know, and I've had some other friends who've had their careers have just already peaked and it's over. You know what I mean? And all those years, you have to learn how to be so gracious and happy for other people while you're just busting your ass at a 9-to-5 job, wondering what's wrong with your music. You know what I mean? But it's so, these times, these full circle moments make it all worth it, you know?
So you write White Liar. You have these 8 songs with Miranda, who's at the time in Texas, and it's coming up, and you guys are writing together. That gets put on a record. Was that your first number one? Was that your first, like, big cut?
Yeah, well, yes. She was my first huge cut. Yes, that was, I knew I was going to have 4 songs on a record, and I knew, like, one of them might have the potential, obviously, to be a single. I actually kind of wanted Only Prettier to be the single. But I was so happy when White Liar came out. And it sounded so good on the radio because it sounded so different. It started with the chorus, you know. And at the time, there wasn't a lot of songs like that. It has kind of the bluegrass driving feel.
Want to play this? This is Only Prettier. That's awesome. So I'll ask you this. So after this album comes out, and now you're Natalie Hemby with a number one and cuts, do more people want to write with you? Are you cooler now, a little more in vogue?
Oh, sure. Everybody is. You know, if you're an artist and you start hitting on all cylinders, all of a sudden everybody wants to write with you. And it's the same way for writers. But I also was... You know, it's a strange thing that happened. I know this sounds like, oh, bust out the violins. But after White Liar went number one, I've known Tom Douglas for years. I used to sing his demos like forever ago. I was writing with him the day after. And for some reason, I was like, I said, Tom, I don't know what it is. I feel kind of sad. I don't understand. I'm like, I had my first number one, hopefully I'll have another one. And he was like, well, that's just it. It's because you think you can't do it again, you know, and it took all this time and all this energy and effort and prayers and everything else. And he's like, that's kind of the downside to hitting those moments. It's like, you really have to teach yourself how to enjoy them, because it's easy to go, well, then what next? What mountain do I climb next? But I kept writing and writing and writing. And honestly, I didn't really have Baggage Claim came out, and then I didn't really have anything going on for a while until I got a new publishing deal, another one. And Laura Ripe said, hey, have you ever written with Little Big Town? And I was like, no. And I always have wanted to, because I've known them for years. They used to sing demos in Nashville too. And I'd see them passing in and out of the studio. And so I started writing with them and immediately just had a major connection with all four of them.
They're good people.
They're great people. They're I love you, by the way.
And I say it so much. Like, I have a wall, and it gets brought up eventually, but it's the people that, like, I have a personal, like, connection with. And I keep six pictures on the wall. It's over there to your left. And those are the only six that I have up there. It's Little Big Town and Marin and
those are good people.
Urban. Pastley's one of my best friends.
I love Pastley so much.
Like, but these are all great humans.
They're great humans.
Jansen and Kelsey.
Yes.
And so, like, those are my people. And Little Big Town, they're just so... I ran into Kimberly. She said, because I have my thing is, I won't listen to new music until it comes out, because I want to experience it like the people that listen to my show.
Yes.
Because I want to talk. I can't be above my listeners, and I don't feel like I am, so I can't be cool.
No,
because I'm not cool.
And right, I get what you're saying.
So everyone's always like, listen to new music. And I'm like, you know what? As much as I would love to, like, I am my listeners.
Yes,
and I
totally.
And I have to be, so I'm going to wait till the day it comes out. I'm going to be excited about it. And Kimberly was like, I hope this is right, because I'm just going from memory. She goes, hey, I wrote a song with Natalie about a Bible. Did you guys write a song together on their new record?
No. You know what? I know what song that is.
What song did you write together? She said you guys...
I wrote a few songs with them.
On their new record, though.
On their new record, but I the two that made it was one that I wrote with Lori and Barry. No, she wrote Hillary. Hillary. I'm pretty sure that it's either Hillary or Lori, because...
What did you write on the new record? Because she brought you up specifically.
Did she? Yeah. I wrote Free on the new record.
And I haven't heard them because I won't listen. Because she was like, hey, listen. You should listen.
I haven't
to the
song. Heard them either. They're being so
Wait,
kind of secretive.
You haven't heard the song?
No,
they haven't sent
heard
you
it.
The song that you
no.
wrote?
No. They're being so stingy, and I'm going to go roll their house with toilet paper or something. But no, they haven't played it for me yet. No. And actually, Miranda didn't either. And I was like, I want to hear the record. But
shouldn't that be a rule? Like, if you write the song, when it's produced, like,
I think it should be a rule.
Maybe you don't have to email it, but you can at least let me hear it just through the phone.
Have me over and let me hear it. No, and then I wrote one with the guys called Roland.
That's what it is. It's the two guys, and you wrote it.
Yes,
right. Philip and Jimmy. That's what it was. That's what it was. Now
and
it makes
I love
sense.
It. I love it so much. It's
they brought you up to me because I was like, hey, Natalie. They were like, we love Natalie. And I was like, I haven't met her, but she's coming to the house. And I knew that. So you have, when people say Natalie Hamby, they're like, she's in these camps, you know, you're known as in the Miranda camp and you're known as a Little Big Town camp.
Yes.
And so found out how you're in the Miranda camp for lack of a better term.
No, it is. That's what it is.
How did you, like, what was the first song for Little Big Town that you wrote that kind of popped out and how did you end up with this relationship with them?
Well, first of all, they're so kind that when you meet them, you feel like you know them already. And you know what? I so relate to them because I felt like, to me, they were always underdogs and
grinders for sure.
Grinders. Yeah. And you know what? I so was the same way in my own way, you know, like just always worked hard and almost there and not quite and almost there, but should be there. You know what I mean? They were so amazing even back then. But, the first song we ever wrote was called Night Owl. And I was like, I wanted to do like an Everly Brothers type of deal with them. And you know what? Here's one thing you need to know about me. I love, my favorite songs and records are last songs. And on Revolution, I have Miranda's last song is Virginia Bluebell. And then on this one, on Tornado, it was Night Owl. And it's sort of like, I just love album closers. They're just the most poignant songs to me. And so I wanted to write this Everly Brothers type call and answer song for the record. And literally that was the first song we wrote together. And then they started cutting my songs, which I was like, wow. I had no idea how many they had cut on the Tornado record. And I was just so excited because literally...
You say the Tornado record, you actually wrote Tornado. I mean, you wrote the song.
Which is...
It's the record's named after.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
You get paid. You don't get paid extra for that,
no,
right?
I mean,
you didn't come up with the word Tornado, but that would be cool. This house, spin it around. Did you write this or Pontoon with them first?
I didn't write either one of them with them.
Well, for them.
For them? I wrote this for them first, yeah.
I meant for them. So this one first, and then Pontoon second.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I wrote Pontoon with Luke and Barry, and we almost wrote it like as a joke.
Luke Laird.
Yes. Yeah. Like literally we're like, I mean, the first line we originally had was back this bitch up into the water. I mean, that's how funny we were trying to, we were like... And they just made it cool.
So when you write this, and it's a light song, and like you just said, you kind of wrote it, the idea came as a joke. It was such a smash.
Oh, dude. I mean, it blows my mind. Like, I love the song. I love how they did it. But it just makes me laugh that my piece of crap, piece of shit work tape can turn into something like that. I mean, it blows my mind, honestly.
When it was said motorboating, did you guys laugh? Because that's,
look, here's the story. So we're like on a pontoon making waves and catching rays. Literally we write every line right up until that moment. We're like out here in the open, and then finally I was like motorboating, like, what are you going to say there? That's what you say. You say motorboating, but it was like, oh, do we say it? Sure. Because there is this generation of before, it's usually before like 15 years old and then over 50 that does not know what the inner meanings of motorboating is. So it was sort of like we got away with it concerning that crap, but some people were like, you knew what that was. And I'm like, well, yeah, it's in the freaking movie. Right. And I'm like, but what else are you going to say there?
Wedding Crashers is what.
You motorboat son of a bitch. So, yeah, I know. Sorry. So I should say that.
You can listen. This is, you can say whatever you want. So, okay, you have, you write these. Little Big Town has two monsters with them. I mean, those really put them on the map as like big acts.
Blows my mind. I mean, honestly, yeah.
But that put them on as big acts.
It catapulted them, yes, like, in a crazy way. So here's a funny story. Like, we bought a pontoon, my husband and I did, because we were like, if we're going to write a song, we need to buy a pontoon. And literally, I'd hear it in other people's boats on the lake. I mean, it was crazy. And I tell you what, you could write a song about, like, the most poignant song about your mother who did this, or... you know, saving souls and babies and all this stuff. But when we played Pontoon, people just go batshit crazy over it.
Because it's a fun song.
It's a fun song. They love it.
Do you ever have to remind yourself that sometimes it's okay just not to be so serious and, sincere all the time?
Yes. I mean, honestly, I think this is the best advice is, I mean, you know, don't take yourself too seriously. Don't get pissed off if people don't like your music. Like, for example... when we went to go buy this pontoon, my daughter, we had her on the boat, and we took a test drive with this guy, and he had to sell the boat because his wife was having a baby. And he was so nice. We really enjoyed talking to him. And as we get to the dock, my child's kind of getting fussy, and we start to get off the boat, and she goes, motorboating. And the guy goes, oh my God, that song is so awful.
No.
Having no clue that I had written it. And my husband was like,
that's so
my husband
funny.
Was looking at me like, oh my God, what's she going to say? And I just kind of put my head down. And I was like, that song is a piece of shit. And I literally just walked away. And it was the funniest moment. And I just got the biggest kick out of it, but I'm so grateful for my number one piece of shit, you know?
But in an awesome way, isn't it funny that your kid is singing it, like she's heard it.
Oh, yeah.
He knows it, but it's coming out of a kid. I mean, it's that big of a song that's all the way wrapped back around.
I wrote one. We wrote one of those songs, yeah. You know? I was like, that's just crazy to me.
Well, so, it's funny you bought a pontoon. Do you still have the pontoon? Do you have that one?
Oh, no, we've already sold it.
You sold it?
Yes. And it is the truth.
Don't
the day
buy
you buy it at the boat yeah. and the day you sell it are the best days of your life, so.
I got into the whole boat thing, too.
No.
Never again.
No, thanks.
Tell me about this one here. But I don't know why.
You know what? That one is so funny because that was the first time I wrote with Shane and Luke together. And we just were, it was so random. Literally, we didn't have a hook at all. We just started from the very, you know, all the parties in the streets are talking or whatever. I can't even think of my own lyrics. But my point is, we started on the verse and literally just kind of wrote it line by line. And then whenever, they cut it. I was just like, I don't know. Anytime someone cuts something of mine that's outside of my quote unquote camp, I'm always like, oh, thank you, Jesus. You know what I mean? But Lady Antebellum, that was, for me, that was a fluke. Like, I was like, I can't believe that just happened. But they did a great, I mean, it did really well on the charts. And
yeah, really well. It crushed.
I mean, and they put out the most hilarious video for it. And I mean, I was so grateful at the time. So.
Man, I have
there's no big story behind it. Only big story is the first time that Shane and Luke and I had ever written together, which I have really good luck with verse. Even going back to Tornado, I wrote that with this girl, Delta Maid, and she's from Liverpool. And it was 2011. It was the last write of the year for both me and her. And there was tornado sirens going off outside. And she's like, do you guys have a lot of tornadoes here? And I'm like, yes, we do. And she's like, I've always wanted to write a song called Tornado. And I'm like, I was like, that's a badass idea. I think that's a great idea. So we wrote it. And then literally, Karen's like, let's put it on hold. We're going to call our record Tornado. Oh, by the way, it's a single. Oh, it's, you know, 25, 10, 5. And then it goes number one. And then literally the next time I saw Delta was at our number one party. So I'd only seen her two times in my life. And I just thought that was so, but I have really good luck with writing with people on a first try.
Is there ever an ego thing amongst writers where someone goes, hey, I have an idea, but you want to have the idea?
Oh, sure. I mean, we're all secretly jealous of one another. I mean, especially when you hear a great song that one of your friends wrote, you're like, damn it. I'm like, I'll never forget when Mary played me My Church. She sent it to me in a text, and when she was out there writing with Busby, and we had just written with Busby, and I was like, doggone it. I loved it so much. I was like, that's amazing. I said, I'm totally pissed you wrote that without me, but I'm totally excited for you.
You know, you talk about Maren. Let me talk about Sherry's Berries for a second.
All right. So again, Valentine's Day is coming up. If you're hearing this, if we, you know, it's pretty recent after we're doing this, but Valentine's Day is coming up. And you can send, even if it's not Valentine's Day, maybe you're hearing this months from now, but if it's Valentine's Day, you want to send them something awesome. Let me talk about Sherry's Berries. Freshly dipped strawberries from Sherry's Berries starting at $19.99 plus shipping, or double the berries for $10 more. You just need my code BONES to get the deal. These berries are humongous. They're fresh, they're juicy, they're sweet, they're shareable. They're dipped in all kinds of stuff like white milk, dark chocolatey goodness. They're huge. You can send them to him at work. You can send them to her at work. And everybody's going to be jealous. But they're so big and there's so many that they'll be able to share too. They're going to love them. Even if it's not for Valentine's Day. But right now it's almost Valentine's Day is why I'm talking about it. Valentine's Day is right around the corner. Only one day to get Sherry's Berries starting at $19.99. Berries.com. Click on the microphone on the upper right-hand corner and type in Bones. Berries.com. The microphone, top right-hand corner. Click in Bones. Valentine's Day is coming up right now. But if it's not Valentine's Day too, just check out the site Berries.com.
All right, we're back here. And we were talking about Maren Morris a second ago, and I love the record. I'm a Maren fan.
Me too.
I was getting in trouble for stealing YouTube clips and playing Maren on the radio before the songs were even out there. Because I just
love that. Because you love her music.
I do. I didn't even know her. I loved her music, but she came up, and the record is so good. And this is one of my favorite songs on the record. I'm not the hero in the story. And you wrote this.
I wrote it with her and Ryan.
This is a jam.
I love this song. 'Cause you're looking for true love and I'm not the one.
wish I was.
And that's a jam right there.
I love that song.
I mean, and it's not a single yet. Who knows if it will be? It don't matter. That's just a... it's an amazing song.
I don't care if it's a single.
It's an amazing song.
I'm super... And it turned out... The feel of it is so nice. That backbeat playing, you know? And the piano. Everything is perfect.
The way you feel about me.
I should let you sing it, not me, because I love it.
I sang on it.
But you can't make a heart say something.
Are you singing background vocals on this?
Yeah. Me, her, and Ryan are.
So gonna hate me if you have to. I hate myself too. Cause as much as I wanna be, I'm not the hero in the story.
That's so good, Natalie. Oh my goodness.
Thank you. I love that song.
Cause you're looking for true love and I'm not the one. But I wish I was.
You know, both her and Ryan have come up separately and done this, and they're just both creative beings.
They are. They totally are. And they create such great music together too.
Man, that's and a good song.
That wasn't the first song I wrote with the two of them, but
what else did you write with them?
I wrote a song.
We can start with the
I wrote that with Busby.
This is a good one, though. Marin song too.
Yeah, I love this
song.
This
is a good too. So you're in the Marin camp.
I mean, I will say, Marin is probably.
I listen to the record back and forth.
No, me
times.
Too. Yeah. It's such a phenomenal record. Marin is like, I called. I don't know if she's ever told the story, but my friend Daniel Tashin was the one who turned me on to her. And Daniel is an amazing writer here, and he's from Nashville too. He's like, you need to write with this girl, Marin Moore. She's amazing. And he sent me a song, and I was flipping. You should hear the songs that she hasn't cut. I mean, if I do another record, I'm gonna put some of them on my record. Like, she don't have no choice. But I called her. I went to Kroger late one night because I was leaving the next day, and I was like, I called her at 10:30. I was like, you don't know me, but my name's Natalie Hemme. I was like, I love your writing and your voice. And I was like, I would love to get together and write. And we have a true friendship, she and I do. We just, it's a very, like, honestly, Marin doesn't need me. You know what I mean? None of these people need me. And that's what I really love about working with these people is we don't really need each other, but we love working together. And that's what makes it fun. And that's how I feel about her. She has a camp of a great group of people she writes with, but she can write her ass off. She's a great writer. So
the first song, you know what turned me on to her? It was a song that she hadn't cut. I think it's called Hate.
Oh God.
That's the first song I ever heard. That's the first song I played ever of hers. And I was like, this is like different level type stuff. And it wasn't on the record, and it sits on YouTube. You can still find it. And I was like, holy crap.
Oh my God. Well, we wrote a song. That song like literally made me cry. But one of my favorite songs, I'm literally going to put it on my next record. It's called, that I wrote with her. It's called No Way Out. And I wrote it with her and Ian Fitchick. And it's like, who told you there was no way out? Every door was open. Every wall came down. Who told you there was no way out? It's such a beautiful song. And she has ability to write this super sassy songs, but she's so heartfelt, you know. Man. I love that girl. So glad you love her too.
Oh, I'm just, you know, there are some people that you just root for too.
I know,
it's like, not
yes.
only do you just love their music, but you also root for them because of how they did things.
Yeah, totally.
And she was here 3 weeks or so ago, and you know, she came to, because Ryan and I did this months ago, and man, I was like, I want to come to your house and do this
yes.
thing. And I was like, let's find a time, because I'm always on the road. She's always on the road. She came up, and we sat down and talked. And I told her, I said, you know, I'm a fan, but when you got up and you spoke at the CMAs, when she won the Best New Artist, we talked about the speech. She was like, I didn't have anything ready. They started rushing me. I said, you said to me what was one of the more poignant things and something that I remember that just
triggers constantly is that 1 year ago you were sitting at a freaking bar across the street watching on TV.
I know. That's how it is.
And if that's not if you don't get inspired by that,
I don't know
what can inspire you.
I don't either. I was literally drinking and tweeting all night, and I just like Maren Moore. I literally called her the next day. I was like, I'm so sorry.
How about this song right here? Because I love this one here. Keith Urban, Good Thing.
Oh my God, yes.
This is a jam. Tell me about this one.
Well, you know what? Keith is, I mean, Keith is so, he's so talented, a great player. And actually, this was our second write we had written on, and it was me, him, and Micah Elizondo. And actually, that day we wrote the song, it was a really tough day. And it was just sort of like, you know what? Keith is, he doesn't need me either. Basically, I would say Keith and I are like an orange and a mushroom. We're not in the same food group necessarily. But you know what? I learned a lot from him. Like when he started playing this guitar riff, I was like, I started singing this totally different melody. And he said to me, he goes, okay, that's really badass. He said, but it sounds more badass when you sing it. If I sing it, it does not sound the same. And I was like, touche, that totally makes sense to me, you know? But Keith is very, he's a passionate person. He's a passionate writer. And I had a blast writing with him on that day. But it was also a really tough day, only because I was just trying to figure out which direction he wanted to go, you know? Sometimes you walk in with ideas for people and it's just, you have to feel out the room. And I was trying to get his vibe on it. But you know what? I'm so grateful that he cut that song. And I love how it turned out. And the guitar solo is amazing on it. So
I want to get to your album in a second. I want to go a couple more songs deep, though, on stuff that you've written.
Sure.
Like, my favorite artists, frankly, are strong women artists, period. Like, current artists.
Me too.
So they are. And I love Maren. Like, my favorite contemporary artist right now is Kacey Musgraves, period.
I love Kacey
She's my favorite, like...
She's my favorite.
She's my favorite.
She's everybody's favorite. She's awesome.
And so... Don't want to be a part of... Love this song. Good old boys club. Cigars and handshakes. Appreciate you, but no... So tell me about this song.
Well, you know, I have been... I'm from here. I mean, I've been saying for years, I'm like, screw the boys club. Like... And I do mean the good old boys club, you know, here. There was this, I don't know, I'm not trying to rip on the guys because there's
no,
a lot
you
of...
No, feel free. I do all the time. I think...
It's like, you know what, there's a lot of talented guys, but I'm just kind of tired of the same shit that sounds the same coming out all the time. Same dudes who sound writing the same crap. And you know what I'm talking about. Everybody's been preaching it for a while, but it's like when this girl right here... there's five girls right now, I think, on top 50 radio in country music. And I'm just like, damn it. Come on.
There's a shift happening, though.
There is a shift.
There is a shift.
And I think I'm so grateful that we have voices. And I'm not saying put us on the radio because we have boobs. I'm saying there's some great music coming from female artists that have not been given a chance. That's what it is.
So for me, and this has been something that over the past, you know, since my little tenure started in Nashville, is that every year I would just take a week and just highlight females. I was raised by all women. Like, you have to, with
Dude,
my background,
yes.
Like, I was raised by all women, mom, grandma, sisters. So for me, I love,
you're like, that's how my husband is. I mean, he's been around girls all his life. And I mean, there's some strong women here. There's some amazing singers here.
But here's where the artists. Blame goes, because Rolling Stone would come and do it. Like, hey, tell us why there are no women. And my thing, it's not a... First of all, I'm different because I'm an idiot and I get to play whatever I want. Now, at this point, I didn't always. I got in a lot of trouble when
no,
I first started.
I love that because I get to write whatever I want.
Right, right. At this point now, we kind of get to choose our own destiny.
Totally.
We didn't at first. I failed... miserable. I'm writing my second book. It's called Winning by Losing. Like, you have to lose so many times to learn to win.
No, you do. You
so
do.
With that, I would bring every year, I would find all these girls that I felt like were not being featured and showcased. And they would say, why are you ready to play women? And I was like, well, here's the thing. When there's a sound that's created, everybody wants to copy it.
You know, because it's all about money. Everything's revenue. Everything is revenue based. The whole world's wrapped around revenue, whatever industry you're in.
Totally.
And because this sound comes out that we'll just call it what everybody called it was bro country, which I think is unfairly called that, but okay, fine. We'll use that term.
Right.
Very male, very male.
Very male. Yeah.
Very male and very fun male, like party male.
Yes, totally.
But the labels weren't developing females at all. They weren't developing them to even give out as an option.
No.
Because they saw what was selling, so their minor leagues weren't strong
right.
when it came to, okay... So,
when this runs out.
Right. Like when it runs out, like what do we do? And so my thing has been, we don't need a revolution of anything because a revolution will then fall away. All we need is the best to win.
I agree.
Regardless
of penis or not.
And I think
Stapleton is a great example of that. And Brothers Osborne. I mean, that's what I really just want to see is great music win. And I just, my thing is like, there's some really great female artists, and Casey being one of them, that I feel like, God, you got to give them more of a chance to be on radio. I mean, I think people would, I don't know. I think people would love to hear a little bit more diversity in country music if they would just offer it a little bit more.
And you know what, and again, I don't speak for me. I'm speaking for radio in general.
Absolutely.
Because I feel like a lot of these guys get a bad rap in radio because... they only play what's offered to them from the record labels.
That's true.
I mean, everybody's like, well, right on radio. Well,
labels are blaming radio. It's like
radio
blame
stations
go.
Don't pick blame singles. Game. We're offered. This is the single.
I know.
Will it work? And then we're like, let's see.
I know.
So with that being said, I do want to talk about your record because, I mean, I tweeted you. I was like, I've listened to this thing.
Dude,
like
thank you
three
so
times.
Much for tweeting me. Oh. I've never been tweeted.
I was like, oh, I'm going to look like such a nerd boy.
Dude, are you kidding? That's so sweet.
First of all, talk about the title of the record and what it means.
Well, Plexico is a little town in southeast Missouri. It's called Plexico. And I basically, here's the long short of it. I got this harebrained idea before White Liar, before I had any hit number one song, to do a documentary in my grandparents' small hometown in southeast Missouri. And basically, they have this festival every year called Homecoming. And anywhere from 8,000 to 10,000 people come out to this tiny town of, like, literally it's like 880 people now that live in this town. From Tuesday to Saturday, and they have carnival rides, square dancing, goat burgers. It's like literally Mayberry with a little carnival. And it's such a bygone era. And I noticed one year the attendance was really down. And I was like, I wish we could do a documentary and base it on, you know, how do you keep a homecoming alive? How do you keep your town alive? How do you keep a tradition alive? And so I got together. I met Ryan Silver and Scott Murphy. And we went and filmed in Plexico for 2 weeks. It was the hottest week ever on record. And it was exhausting, and we did this documentary, but it turned into this thing of more of a story about my grandfather and I and our relationship, and like why I love Plexico so much is really because of him. And it's like, and that's part of what I have on the front of the record. It's like, in the beginning I thought this was about a town, but really it's about a man who loved me so much I had to tell the world, you know, that sort of deal. And that's kind of what it came into. And so what happened, though, was I had the soundtrack that I'd written for it with some great buddies of mine, Trent Dabbs being one of them, Lindsay Chapman, Jen Schott, Kelly Archer, Jonathan Cassandra Lawson. All these people contributed to this. And so Ryan and Marin actually were going to Michigan, and they were like, can we have the soundtrack to Plexico? We really love the music. And they were listening to it on the way up there, and they kept texting me, you got to put this out. This is so beautiful.
You were considering
beautiful.
Not putting it out?
Well, I was going to put it out more as a soundtrack and just more as like, but then I'm like, no, this is my first record. It really is. This is like the deepest part of who I am as a person. This is like part of my story, my history. And I love, my husband produced it. He played most of the instruments on there. But we got like some great guys like Fred Altringham, Greg Lease play on it. And Jonathan actually played on Cairo. But it became this beautiful, I just loved how the project turned out. It sounded so beautiful. It just sounded like my soul bled, you know? And
I love Cairo. I love
Cairo.
This is so good.
Still I'll keep driving past the ghost of Cairo, Illinois. She used to be a beauty back in 1891. After four defiance, now she's weathered by the river and the sun. She's still around, but she is gone.
Two questions.
Yes.
Question one, can you appreciate just how good that is?
Oh, I love it.
Okay, good. I hope so.
No, I do. And you know what? That was always the pressure of putting out a first record. It's like you wait all this time. It's like I listened to that over and over and over and over and over again, and because it was just, it made me cry the first time I heard it.
Just sonically.
Sonically.
The whole thing. It's just
gorgeous. My husband did such a, and I'm not like, I mean, don't get me wrong, we fight in the studio too. But I so appreciate him musically. I think he has great taste, and he's worked with some brilliant engineers, producers, artists, all these years. It's like he's been conditioned for these types of moments as well. But literally that sonically just is music to my ears. It's so warm sounding. And honestly, that is how I feel when I drive through Cairo, Illinois. Cairo is such an archaic town, and it's like literally the bones of something that used to be beautiful. And there are still people that, by the way, it's also pronounced Cairo, Illinois, which I do know this, but I was like, to the world, someone's going to look at this and think, oh, Cairo, Illinois.
That's what I thought.
I mean, right. Yeah, no, it's Cairo.
I really thought it was Cairo, yeah.
What's funny, in the South and in the Midwest, there's all these different towns. There's like Arab, which was Arab. There's Advance, Missouri. It's Advance. Yeah. You know? So I've gotten a couple of hate mails. It's like, you do know it's pronounced Cairo, right? or Cairo. And I'm like, yes, I do. But anyways, the town is a relic of what it used to probably look like. But to me, it's a symbol of me going home to a place I love, or a symbol of my heartbreak having to leave a place I love. And that's kind of what Jonathan, he's from Missouri too, and he was kind of saying the same thing about when you drive through. It's a very unique, it's an eerie kind of place in this beautiful way.
Do you, when you sing, and your reputation too, because I have a lot of songwriter friends, and your reputation is you don't want to sing a song that you sing in a demo. It's tough to follow you. People always say that.
Do they really?
People don't want to follow Lori McKenna. They're like, if you get a Lori, or a Hillary.
No,
Hillary
I don't
Lindsay.
Either. Yes.
Or you. I mean, those are the ones like, oh, you can't sing like Natalie. Like, that's what people say. Like, when you hear you sing, are you like, man, I'm elite. I'm an elite vocalist.
I don't think I'm elite. I mean, I have my way of doing things, but I don't.
You are elite. I'm telling you right now, you are elite.
Hey, that's my rapper name. I'll take it.
You're elite. You are elite.
I'm not elite. I'm sorry. Oh.
So, I love Ferris. Ferris Well. I picked a few of my favorites.
Oh, dude, pick away. I could stand there watching, but I never know how it feels. Riding high on a ferry. Just when you think you know how it ends.
Were you nervous before it came out?
Oh, I was so nervous.
You were?
Oh, yeah. Well,
because of why, though? Like, what was the pressure for you in your head?
You know, I don't know. I've had so many people, like, through the years, be like, when are you going to put a record out? And I'm like, I ain't putting out a record. Just because... During the time when I was going to put out a record, you had to have a record deal. And I just, to me, it's like, I've watched other people put out their records. It's really nerve-wracking. And I was nervous because I wanted my peers to like it. That's really what it is. I mean, you could sit here and say, oh, I don't care if nobody likes it. And I do feel that way a little bit. I mean, I like what I like, and I don't let anybody else get in the way of that. But I also want to be I want people, other people to like it. Not really for a selfish reason, but just, you know, I loved the fact that Maren and Ryan called me on the way on a road trip and they wanted to listen to this. Because that is what, that's how I want people to listen to this record. I want them to go back home, take a road trip somewhere, put it in the car, roll the windows down, you know, and just kind of escape and be happy and have that feeling of nostalgia a little bit, you know?
Let me give them one more. Tell me about this song here. Pull this down. This is this is probably my most played song.
Well, I appreciate that. You know what? Jen Shot, that was her idea. And it was so crazy. I actually didn't write it for the documentary. We wrote it because she had lost her dad and she had gone back home. And, you know, just anytime you lose someone that you love, it's almost like they're still around even when you go back home to visit. And that's kind of what this was about. But it turned into so much more. When my record came out, it was Friday, January the 13th. And that was the anniversary, which was coincidence of when Jen's father had passed away. And then also I lost an aunt that day. And I don't know, Dorf, you know, Andrew Dorf passed away. And just this song hits home in so many ways, you know. Even when I go home to Puxco, it's like I still feel like my grandmother's there, you know. It's like we all leave our fingerprints behind. I guess you hung around, something to talk about.
So good.
Thank you so much.
It's so good. That's so good.
It means a lot that you like it, honestly.
Listen, who cares what I like? I love it.
No, I care. I like what you like.
Well,
you like all my friends. Man. We like the same thing.
Natalie Hemby. Wow.
Dude, we're like best friends already.
I just look at this body of work, and even now, I understand why I'm intimidated to talk to you.
Oh, shush. It's no way.
You're just on a different level.
I'm actually not. I'm just, you know, I love music just like everybody else. And I honestly, I always want to throw a few curveballs here and there. I'm so glad I get to do it because I didn't get to do it for a long time, you know. I didn't know if I was going to be able to ever, I never thought I'd be able to have a career like this, you know. I always hoped for it, but man, it's been a ride. If it all ends tomorrow, I will die grateful, you know. And I just hope nobody plays really bad songs at my funeral.
And you're actually leaving here to go write about, can I say this?
Is that okay? Oh, please.
To write with Lucy Silvas. And anytime Lucy gets brought up on this, we always call her. She's always like, Bobby, what? And so
we have to call Lucy
I will call Lucy.
She's going to die.
For myself. And last time she didn't answer, but she called me right back because...
She'll answer. I think I told her I was coming over here.
Oh, okay. Then she'll know. Did she say nice things? Or did she watch out?
She probably hates me, but she's like my best buddy. I love her so much.
Good evening.
we're talking about you again on... I know. So Natalie and I are here talking. So what would you say about Natalie's not listening. She's in the isolation booth. So
the isolation booth. I was conjuring up all sorts of images. What would I say about Natalie? Mm-hmm. Just how can anyone resist that husky voice? It's just so appealing. I could listen to it all day and all night, speaking or singing. She's the coolest person. I've met her a long time ago, so she's been very a big part of my Nashville story. And did a lot of changes in my life she was there for as well. And she's the sweetest person on earth, very humble and sweet, but talented. She's like a Bonnie Raitt to me. So
Do realize every time that we bring a friend up here, we're going to call you on the phone and ask you your thoughts.
I actually love these. I'm looking. Is it a monthly podcast or a weekly podcast?
It's weekly. Sometimes a couple a week, yeah.
I seem to have missed a couple of weeks.
That's okay. That's the good thing about a podcast. You can catch up.
Perfect.
All right.
Of course, you have me on.
Yes. That's the big finale. That's going to be the final episode. We finally have you on after all the cell phone calls.
Okay. Well, you guys have fun.
All right. So, bye, Lucy. Bye-bye.
So let me just tell you a little something about Lucy. Lucy and I are the same age, but we met and we had to stay. We've gone on all these BMI trips together and we always stay in the same room. And she is so damn gorgeous. And when she wakes up in the morning, she has wild, crazy, beautiful Victoria's Secret hair and like has this cute little outfit on. And I am literally in a sweatshirt. In sweatpants, I might as well have a retainer on and face cream and hair in a bun and like seriously like, and we both sound like men in the morning. Like we're like, do you want to get some coffee? Yes, Natalie, I'd love some coffee. Yeah, I mean literally, it's like it's so funny.
She to me, we were at dinner a month or so ago, and I just never talked to her about her past life, which is the music she made in the UK.
Yes.
And I was like, Lucy, we spent all this time together. Tell me about like what she goes. I sold 1 million records in the UK. And I was like, what?
Yes.
She was like, she's like, 1 million. And I was like, what was your biggest song? She's like, well, I did a Metallica cover of Nothing Else Matters with the band. And
they were murdered her over the internet, like some of the Metallica fans.
Was blown away. And I came home
and beautiful.
It was way before the rasp that she has now.
Yes.
But yeah, it's really awesome. Anyway, Lucy gets brought up in every one of these because everybody loves Lucy. If you don't love Lucy.
No, if you don't love Lucy, I don't love you. That's what we should make these t-shirts of.
Let me end with this. It's a little, so I have a girlfriend that's an artist. You have a husband that's in the industry. How do you guys, because it's a cool thing because you can bond and relate, but it's also a lot.
Oh yeah. No, it's always home. And, you know, it's hard. I mean, sometimes it's hard, you know, since my family is in the music business, I kind of learned how to navigate between those two. And I work with men all the time, but I literally have thousands of brothers in the world is what I always say. But you know what? I think the thing is, you just have to always remain respectful of each other and your talents. And you know what? I also, there's times where I have had nothing going on. And he just kept it going, kept me inspired, kept me writing. And there's times where he's had nothing going on. I'm like, I kept him going, kept me inspired. And I always tell him, like, you know what? One thing that we're really good at is we pull inward, you know? When he and I make music together, good things happen, and I'm so grateful for that, you know, because it sure beats the alternative.
What about, because this has become oddly a very, like, a lot of artists listen to this because I get to get people like you and talk for a long time,
right?
And
right.
There's not a lot of that. I get to bring in songwriters and just really go deep into ideas and thoughts and. So artists will come and even young artists and say, hey, you know, how do I do this? What do you tell artists that are starting now? Like, what's the key to it all?
I think the key to it all is authenticity. Like, you know what? It has to happen at the right time or it will not work and you will have a short career and it'll be over. I mean, if you start too soon and you don't know who you are and you have labels telling you who you are, it will not work out. You really have to give yourself time to develop who you are as an artist, because literally that music will be out forever. You know, I am so glad, by the way, it did not work out for me back then, because I might have turned into, when you sign at a label, you become a product, you know, and if you can have your product ironed out before you get to a label, man, what a much better road to travel. I mean, I feel like that's why Maren is successful, why Casey got her deal. Like, a lot of these artists did that, you know, even Lucy. But if you start off and you're like, make me somebody, and you're just a great singer, well, it's not going to work. You have to be true to who you are. If you're going through a really shitty time, write some songs about it, because people will believe you. I think people want to believe artists now again, you know?
You're right. All the authenticity's been gone for so long that now it's so refreshing.
Yeah.
It's craved.
It is. That's why Adele is so huge.
It's craved.
Because she breaks through this wall of sound that's on the radio. And when her song, when Hello, you know, comes on, you're like, you listen. Because it's like, you feel something. I think people want to feel music again. And not, I mean, look, I love dance music. I love good party songs. But I'm just saying, we need a nice mixture of everything. And it all needs to be authentic. No matter what it is.
You know, one of the artists, and you mentioned Shane McAnally earlier. We didn't say his last name, but Shane. And I like Shane a lot because, first of all, he's a great writer.
He is one of the best writers in Nashville. He's a phenomenal writer.
Sam.
Yes.
Is heavy Shane.
Yes.
You know, they work together a ton. And Walker Hayes, I have Walker Hayes opening for me now on my stand-up comedy tour. And
Walker's awesome.
He's awesome. He's like my favorite. Walker's like my favorite, right? And that's why I was like, dude, you have to come out and do shows with me for like 5 months.
Yeah, totally.
And so Shane signed Walker. So I have all these, you know, ways around to Shane. But I talk about the authenticity of just even the words.
Right.
Of... For example, Sam. And people go, oh, Sam. The haters will go, oh.
No, they do. But really, Sam is totally himself.
Even the words he says sometimes don't fit, but it's so real.
It is.
That it fits because it's human words said.
Well, and he wrote them. I mean, this is what he does. You know what I'm saying? Whether you like it or not.
Right.
Whether you like it or not, even Florida Georgia Line. I mean, they have their own sound. That's their you know, party boy sound kind of thing.
It's funny you bring that up. I was asked about that. And I said, everybody blames them. And I was like, they're not to blame. They created a new sound.
Like, they did.
Everybody copying them is what this culture became for a while. And it's starting to break out of that. But the people that blame Florida Georgia Line, they're ridiculous. What they did was so new.
It was. And I mean, the cruise thing was just so huge.
That it launched a format for like 3.5 years of nonstop that. And did other things fall to this? It's not their fault that they were so different.
But it's like, you can look at any trend and like that in music. I mean, even like, I remember when Vanilla Ice came out back in the day. And it was just like, oh my God, he's amazing. But I mean, then that stuff went away. It was like...
I had the tape. Back in the day, we bought singles on tape.
Of course, I did too. Yes.
And I had... Ice Ice Baby, and you flipped it around. It was Play That Funky Music, White Boy.
It was. I remember.
And
I know.
I also had the MC Hammer Vanilla Ice right down the middle, and it was one on each side. And then I had the MC Hammer, You Can't Touch This, Have You Seen Her, on the backside. I don't know if you remember Have You Seen Her. Have you seen her? Of course.
Tell me, have you seen her? Yeah. Like he's like totally talking in the background. And then along comes Snoop Dogg and just wiped all that out. There's always something that comes along and wipes.
Well, it's like out. The hair bands into grunge.
Into grunge.
And they said, you know, goodbye. And just like that, you know,
done.
Nirvana. It smells like the video of Smells Like Teen
Spirit.
I'll
never forget the first time I saw it.
In the gymnasium. It changed everything.
It did
until the boy bands came in.
Yes.
And then it changed everything.
Yes, and then totally.
But trends always end up going and coming, and they come
do.
Back again.
They
and
will.
That's just the cycle. Everything cycles.
It does. And I actually really like this Chris Stapleton cycle. I hope it sticks around for a really long time.
The thing,
you know what's funny, though? Go back to the blue bird thing. Erica called me one time. She goes, hey, I got a spot. You want to play Bluebird around with Chris? And I said, no. I'm not. No. She goes, what? Are you serious? I was like, no, I'm dead. No, there's no way I'm playing it around with Chris Stapleton.
This is my, and I'll leave on this story. This is my favorite Chris Stapleton story. So I heard Chris sing on YouTube. And he'd been writing. And I have like 10 really good friends in town.
Yes.
Less than 10, but you know, two hands, right?
Yeah, yes.
And one of like my close friends is a writer named Lee Thomas Miller. Lee Miller, we don't call him Thomas. Do you know Lee?
I love Lee.
Okay, close. Like,
yeah.
I don't hang out. I hang out with Lee.
Yeah, because Lee's great, man.
And so every other Wednesday, him and Chris would write together for years. For years. They would just write, write, write. And I was listening to Chris sing on YouTube, and I was like, I got to have this guy. He didn't have a single out. It was just And so I called him, and he was in the shower. And he was like, oh, I was like, hey, come on, studio, just play. Because I just think it's so amazing. And it was my early days here too, and I was causing trouble, and people it wasn't going good for me. It wasn't going good for me at the time,
right?
Because I was just like, screw all that. I just want to do what I want to do, and if it doesn't work, I'm fine with that. But so Chris comes up and he plays, and he obviously crushes it.
Yes.
And I think he came up and he sang a Josh Turner song that he had written.
Yes.
So he comes up and he sings, and I'm just like, holy crap. So I invite him back again. About the fourth time he comes up, someone very high at a radio station, over stations, calls my boss and says, hey, I don't know who this Chris guy is, but you got to stop having him on because nobody knows who he is. And I go to my boss and I'm like, but he's so good. I know he doesn't even have a record out right now, but he's just so good, and that's what I want on the air. I'm not kidding you. A week and a half later, he goes on the CMAs, and that's when him and Timberlake sang together. And I didn't have to say anything. And usually I like to be like, I told you, I didn't have to say anything.
No, you don't have to say anything.
Nothing. And I was so happy for Chris.
Yeah.
And everybody is so happy for Chris, because you talk about a grinder.
Oh, yeah. No, he's been doing it. And Morgan. Morgan is, I wrote one of my favorite songs with Morgan. I wrote a song called Casino. It was on the Nashville show. But she, oh, my God, is she a singer. And literally, like, just had terrible things said to her when she was signed to Sony. And, you know, they made her go to, I don't even want to say it. They've just basically stripped her self-confidence. And you want to talk about also one of the best singers in Nashville. Morgan Stapleton is a mother effer of a singer. But so it was so nice to see the two of them standing up there together. And but I feel like it's fun. I mean, it's fun to watch people jump on the bandwagon after the fact when you were like back in the day going, yeah, this person's amazing and you guys are all stupid and you have no clue. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, now you're ready to accept. But whatever. At least they get
it. At least they get it. That was my intel. I was like, I was just happy for him.
Oh, me too.
You know what?
Oh, I was losing my mind.
I was so happy for him that I was like, I don't even care that people, I don't even care. You know, and I have a library of Chris playing live and nobody else does. I have a library in the studio of him coming up and just playing songs.
Nobody else has that.
Because I have him basically doing his whole record acoustic live because he would just come up and play. And so now...
You just need to do a whole show of all this.
Oh, don't worry. I play him all the time. I've really enjoyed this.
Oh, me too, buddy.
This has been a lot of fun for me.
Oh, listen. Thank you for supporting great artists too. I'm serious. I'm not kissing your ass. I'm being serious. Like, that's a really... I can't say enough about that. I just want people to champion good music, you know? And I'm not saying, like, just because I don't like your music, it's not good music. I'm just saying, though, like, people who genuinely are talented and people all over the world would recognize it. You know what I mean? Put those people up in the spotlight. I love that, you know?
Well, this has been fun.
I've had a blast.
You are a definite presence that I enjoy.
Well, likewise.
I'm not a presence that anyone enjoys.
Oh, you totally are.
I got nothing.
We have all the same friends, so that makes us really close friends immediately. So.
Oh, man. Natalie Hemby. Wow.
Thank you so much for having me.
Get Puxico. Download it. And I always say, download it, don't stream it, because you stream it, she ain't getting paid. You know what I'm saying? Thank you. This has been episode 34, and probably want to... Mike, you have any questions? You're sitting over there producing away. Ask her a question.
Do you ever, like, get an idea in a dream for a song? Like, you wake up and...
Oh, my God, yes. That is so weird you say that. I've done it several times. Like, I'll try to sing... Well, I get melodies in my dreams. So I'll sing into my phone at 3 a.m, but it's like... It's like 2 octaves lower than it should be, but... Oh, all the time. It's weird. It's divine.
Yep. All right. We'll see you next time. Thank you, guys. Bye-bye. Blue Apron's awesome at my house. If you come, you'll often see a Blue Apron box just sitting up on the counter, because Blue Apron 1 is affordable. For less than $10 per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes with pre-portioned ingredients so you can make delicious home-cooked meals. And not all ingredients are created equal. Fresh, high-quality ingredients make a real difference. It's important to know where your food comes from. They're very flexible, too. You can customize your recipes based on your preferences. They have delivery options. You can choose what fits your needs, too, and there's no weekly commitment. Get the deliveries when you want them, and each meal comes with a lifesaver, a step-by-step recipes card, and I wouldn't be able to do this without this recipe card because I'm not good. Blue Apron has made me better, but these meals, though, too, they're fresh. I would never be able to make stuff like this, but Blue Apron lines it up for me. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals for free with free shipping. BlueApron.com/BobbyCast. BlueApron.com/BobbyCast. First three meals for free. BlueApron.com/BobbyCast. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.